right, it is Thursday noon, and what that means, it is time for another edition of Renegade Radio. Welcome to everyone out there listening, and thank you for tuning in today. My name is Andy Lowe. I'll be your host today. Renegade Radio is brought to you each and every week by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And as always, we're going to be discussing people and companies that are breaking those conventional norms, getting outside of the box, and doing things to create business and life success. Today's going to be no exception. I've got two great guests with me. I've got Mr. Brad Childress. He is a partner at TechCXO, and Mr. Brian Sholley, who is the CMO for Chief Outsiders. Gentlemen, welcome to the show today.
Hey, Andy.
Good afternoon.
Brian, let me start with you. Let's start with Chief Outsiders. Do me a favor, and let's start off with a little introduction here. Tell me about your company, who you guys are, and what do you do?
Well, we provide fractional CMOs for growth, small to medium-sized companies that are really potentially struggling to translate their vision into reality, particularly around, as I said, growth. You know, over the past couple of years, companies have been very, very focused on operations and just really needing to do that from a survival standpoint. But once you kind of take your foot off from a growth or marketing standpoint, getting that that beat back can often be difficult. And what we're able to do is be able to provide companies with senior level marketing expertise, you know, at a fraction of a cost of going out and hiring somebody full-time to, you know, come in and be part of your senior management team.
So that's what you mean by fractional, then?
Correct.
They're kind of part-time.
Yep.
All right. Because I didn't know. I'm like, do I get half a guy, half a brain? I mean, you know how it is hiring people these days, right? Okay.
It depends upon, you know, what a company's need is. So that you can hire somebody and get half their time, three-quarters, or, you know, a quarter of their time.
Okay, so how does that process work? Do I hire them per project? Are they committed to a certain number of hours per week?
Again, it really depends on the company and their need. What we'll typically do is come in and do an initial 90-minute consultation with the company to really try to begin to ferret out what are their needs, what are their true issues that they're facing, and then put together kind of a plan and a proposal based upon that.
And what do you have? Do you have a staff of people? Do you have partners that are kind of engaged in other businesses and you just bring them in as needed?
We've got about 25 right now, and we're growing rapidly, but we've got about 25 consultants nationwide. Three main regions are the Northeast, Southeast, and Southwest. And so again, one of the great things that gives me as a consultant when I go into a business is, you're not only hiring myself, but you're getting a great peer group with that. So we do what we call peer reviews every other week, and we're able to talk through, here are the various companies we're working on and any potential challenge that we're facing in there. So, you get not only the person you're hiring, but you get a great core group with that.
Gotcha. Well, let's zone in on the marketing piece for a minute. You know, in today's environment, what are some of the things that companies need to be thinking about when it comes to marketing, and specifically things that they're going to want to bring this fractional CMO in to help them with?
Well, it's really, as I said, how do you begin to transfer that, your visions into reality? And we've got challenges all across the board. I mean, I'm working with a couple of companies that, ultimately want to begin to map out their exit strategy. Well, if they want to be out of the business in 5 years, you really need to start thinking about that today.
Well, that's pretty easy. I mean, because most of them are going to be out of business in 5 years.
I
mean, I think that's kind of the SBA results,
right? Trying to end up with a good retirement. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So you got to start thinking about those things in advance. There's a lot of challenges just in terms of too of trying to be very, very purposeful in your marketing efforts. A lot of people just think about marketing as promotion or, a website or the next advertisement. When I think about marketing, I'm really thinking about the entire, product and consumer experience. It's the essence of the brand. And when you talk about those types of things, you got to think much broader about marketing and getting into, what's your true strategy? What does he ultimately want to do? And if you think about, those are ultimately the most successful companies. I mean, everybody thinks about Southwest. They think about Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is selling a chicken sandwich, but they're doing it, executing it in a vastly superior manner.
So is there a particular demographic of company that kind of fits this need, or is this something, because I can do it as a fractional basis, that really fits a wide range of companies from small to medium to even larger companies?
It fits a wide range. I mean, for us, I think we see our sweet spot as probably, $100 million and down. But again, there's a lot of people that are going out, and if they're saying, okay, it's time now to potentially hire somebody, but again, in this era of uncertainty. You know, we've got the elections coming up in the fall. People still don't know what Obamacare is going to mean to an organization. This is one way where you can, you know, hire somebody in without making that long-term commitment. So, you know, almost on a rent-to-buy type of a basis.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, my mind just immediately thinks $100 million company. Mm-hmm. Seems like they'd already have a CMO. Do they, or do they just need to cut?
Sometimes they do, but nationally right now, I think the average tenure for a CMO is about 22 months. So, you know, there's a lot of turnover. And again, there's just, you know, it kind of points to the pressure and the stress that has been placed on organizations to try to, you know, beat out that next dollar of revenue.
I was going to say, why so much turnover in that position?
I think it's just, you know, again, when you think about marketing again, everybody kind of assumes that they're the people that have the handle on the purse strings. They're the ones that are, you know, in control of growth. And, you know, again, with the economic uncertainty we've had, you know, dialing up that next dollar of revenue is very, very difficult. And so, you know, it's easy just to look at those types of positions and say, okay, you know, you're not working out, we'll try something else.
Is that an advantage in the fractional side? I mean, let's say that I were to contract with you and I had a CMO part-time and he's working with me, but I've been working with him for a year, maybe two, whatever, and I'm really looking for some fresh perspective. Can I just swap my guy out?
You can swap your guy out. We could come in and work in conjunction with that. We really try to come in and be part of the senior management team. So we want to come in and be a partner, not just come in and throw a strategy over the wall, but really help you see those things out. And it is a growing trend. Wall Street Journal had an article about that. I think it was just about a month ago. Not only, you know, on the marketing side, but chief technical officers, you know, financial officers, et cetera. It's a growing trend.
Yeah, here's a question regarding marketing, because you were talking about some of the things that people think about when they think about marketing and they think about, you know, some of the traditional methodologies of marketing. But social media, big buzzword, all the rage when it comes to marketing, right? You know, maybe help us understand, one, what marketing means really when it comes to social media. And then I got a follow-up question that I want to go ahead and put on the table for you. We had a guest in a short time ago talking about social media and the differences between social media if your marketing is reaching out to a consumer, mm-hmm. and social media if your marketing is reaching out because you're a B2B style company. So maybe you could hit that topic for us.
Correct. Great question. I still personally wrestle with that role, particularly in a B2B role, in a B2B play. So many companies are just almost rabid to get, you know, the little Facebook, you know, icon on their website and Twitter and that. And if you're going to do those things right, it is a major commitment of time. I mean, if you're going to be blogging, et cetera, it's not something you can just dabble in. You have to make a commitment to it to have any type of impact whatsoever. So I guess I advise companies to wade into those things with their eyes open and wade in cautiously, particularly if you're a B2B player. I mean, are your customers really going to be on Facebook? Now, they're, you know, even on the B2B side, you can use Facebook for search engine optimization, and there are some benefits there. But you just have to be very, very careful about that. I think obviously there's much bigger plays on the, you know, the B2C side with consumer brands. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of success stories out there, you know, how to use those. But again, it is a major commitment. It's something you can't just, you know, dabble in. You've got to, you know, say, okay, if I'm going to be blogging, I'm going to be putting up 2 to 3 blogs per week, again, to really make that, you know, an impactful medium for you.
So let's move and talk about branding for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, how does branding play into all of this, and how important is this branding message for small business?
I personally think it's critical. Again, these days, finding areas of distinction are harder and harder to come across. And again, you know, I mentioned earlier Southwest and Chick-fil-A, a couple of the hot brands out there today. The reason they are hot brands is because they really have integrated their strategy across, you know, all aspects of their organization, operations, you know, everything they do from HR is all kind of around a consistent theme, a consistent experience that they ultimately want to deliver. And even for a small business, you know, trying to find those areas of distinctiveness is harder and harder. And that, you know, ultimately comes back to the better you can define that brand, it'll lead you to that distinctiveness and help you in the marketplace.
What are some of the early mistakes that maybe some of the small businesses or family-owned businesses are making out there that you guys could come in and help them with immediately?
Wow, I've seen so many. You know, I think probably one of them is just relying on kind of what has worked in the past. Things are changing so rapidly out there today. It's just, you know, it's amazing. I'm working with a company right now that, you know, is successful, but they just kind of have hit a wall. But again, it's one of the things where they've been trying to just kind of expand and thinking, okay, I'll get more revenue if I just do another product, which is not necessarily a way to grow. Sometimes that loss of focus can almost be a death knell for a business, because then you're suddenly you've got your resources, which were already stretched thin. You're now stretching them across to another product line. And again, struggling to find distinctiveness in any of the products, it can be very, very challenging. So you can't rely necessarily on what you've done in the past. And just adding another product, you know, for instance, is not necessarily the way to grow either.
Sure. And that adds a brand new challenge. And that is, you know, maybe you can share about your experience of seeing this, where a company is having success right now. Marketing's working, everything's working, but there's no innovation. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they're already dead in the water. It just hasn't caught up and shown up yet. It's actually, you're a couple quarters down the road before it's really going to happen.
Yep. And that very much can be. So again, being able to find distinctiveness, because again, you know, when people, you know, come to your website, you're talking about seconds, you know, to be able to get them engaged and try to get them to that next level. You know, and sometimes people are saying, well, you know, I'll live with 1% conversion or something. But again, in this era of competitiveness and the fact that we've got a truly global economy, you know, like you said, you may just be on that slow train to nowhere, and you just don't even recognize it yet.
So if someone out there is listening and thinks to themselves, you know, maybe I need a fractional CMO, don't want to commit to somebody full-time, mm-hmm. maybe I need to bring somebody on board that will really help with the direction of our marketing efforts, or maybe they're a larger company experiencing turnover, how do they go about getting in touch with you guys?
If they just come to our website, chiefoutsiders.com, they can, you know, see, you know, the services that we offer there, but then we're also lists even the they can get a profile of each one of our consultants and look at their background and see, you know, somebody that may be very, very consistent with the industry they're in or the vertical that they're in, or they may just want somebody that's local to, you know, close to them, and be able to contact those that CMO directly, and we'll come in and like I said, have a 90-minute consult with them, no strings attached, and just be able to see, you know, is there an area that we could really help them, as I said, translate their vision into reality.
Well, you mentioned how much the marketplace is changing and how constantly evolving. So I have some more questions, especially with this idea of breaking some of these conventional norms, which is a must in a changing marketplace. But I also think our next guest is going to have some parallels with this fractional executive idea. So do you mind hanging out with me a few minutes? Let me bring Brian into the conversation here.
That'd be great.
Fantastic. So actually, I said that wrong. I said Brian. I told you I was going to screw that up, right? I got two B's here today. I got a Brian and a Brad. So let's change gears, and instead, let's talk to Brad. Brad Childress is a partner from TechCXO, and I think you're going to be a perfect fit today, Brad, because the little tagline you gave me for your show today was adapt or die. That's got to go against the conventional wisdoms that we've experienced in the past. So first off, welcome to the show.
Thanks, and Andy.
Second of all, tell us a little bit about TechCXO.
Okay. Yeah, I think that one of the things that Brian said before I get into pitching our firm was that things that worked yesterday aren't necessarily going to work today. And he was talking about that becomes a death knell for many companies. And so you were constantly having to stay up to date. Now, TechCXO is actually a firm that was started about 8 or 9 years ago as a fractional ownership of chief financial officers. It was called TechCFO back in that day. About 2.5 years ago, one of my friends approached me and said, we should start a sales practice because most of our customers who are in a growth or expansion stage have sales issues. I was actually executive VP of sales for a software company here in Atlanta at the time, and I said, well, that sounds like a great idea. Let me introduce you to a couple of friends of mine, and I did, and they started TechCSO, Chief Sales Officer. And we've grown that firm. By the way, in my sarcastic side, I say it's a halfway house for recovering sales executives. But in reality, what it is some really experienced and very smart people from the various disciplines We started in finance. We have about 25 finance partners. And then we've grown Tech CSO. We added a marketing practice also called Tech CMO. And then we added some ex-CEO, COO types. And so we had Tech COO. So we decided to rebrand our firm back in January 1. We relaunched it as Tech CXO, just so that, and we have a finance practice, a sales practice, a marketing practice, and an operations practice. And we offer, obviously, experienced executives in all those disciplines to come in, and you've sort of set, you teed it up very well. We can either work on a project basis. I work on a lot of projects for my customers because they have maybe a changing environment that they can't, they're kind of stumped at how to adapt their sales approach to. I also can be an interim sales executive for somebody. And by the way, one of the things, Brian, I think maybe you'll appreciate this, is I don't want the marketing executives and sales executives think we're actually trying to take their jobs away. We're not. In most cases, I'm actually working side by side with them because they're smart people. They just need an outsider's perspective. One of my customers, for example, it was one of the most challenging engagements I had. It's a software company here in town. It's about a $20 million company. And what had been working for them for several years in the past just wasn't working anymore. And what was working for them in the past was if they could get somebody to find them on the web and download their product, they would sell 70% of those deals. And this was a B2B sale. This wasn't a consumer sale. And that wasn't working anymore because their buying market, their buyers had changed. And so they had to change the way they were selling. They needed a different sales process. They needed a different approach to those. They needed to decide whether actually they were going to go after those kind of companies. And there's a reason.
This is probably a real struggle for them too, right?
It was a very, and by the way, they were very smart.
Human behavior is kind of weird in that regard. It's like a light. You know, you ever notice somebody flips a light switch and you flip it and it always comes on, right?
Right.
But if the bulb blows, you ever notice people flip that light switch several times?
Let's just keep doing this, right?
Yeah, let's keep flipping it. Maybe it'll come on.
And so what happens is, in our marketplace, which we have business with several large companies. They're all technology companies. That's what's common about our customers. And I do some business with Oracle and some business with SAP, and we have a Hewlett Packard as a customer. But most of our companies are in that, I would say, that $10 to $50 million range, or maybe slightly under 100, where they need some outside help. And in the sales practice, we do a lot of consulting, a lot of projects, a lot of business sales process design, go-to-market strategies, and occasionally someone will come up and say, look, I can't afford you full-time, but I need a sales executive with your sort of gravitas and the ability to lead a sales force. Can you come in here 2 days a week or, you know, Mondays and Fridays and run our sales meetings and go on the road with our salespeople? So we'll do, you know, any or all of that. And we'll also do sales. I had a deep background in doing sales training and sales effectiveness consultant, so I can go in and train salespeople. And I typically work with very experienced salespeople, so I know the challenge of it's almost like being a special ed teacher, right? These are challenging students. They were probably challenging students in school too. They were the ones that were sitting, the really smart kids that were getting bored in class. So I've got a lot of experience in working with experienced salespeople, which gives me the ability. I know what good looks like. Right. And so I can go into another company and say, here's what the best the best at this discipline. This is how they behave and this is what they do. Let's see if we can transform your sales force to start exhibiting those kind of behaviors and figure out, do we even have the right salespeople here? So I can help them even with that. With some of them, I have to go in. I have to be very careful because they'll usually take my advice. And if I say, you need to get rid of these three people, those people are going to get gone pretty soon. So I'm very circumspect about the way I do that. So
right. Well, you know, sales is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. And, you know, like you, I've worked with a lot of sales teams and salespeople. And, you know, maybe you can share some battle stories here because there are always things, especially when you're working with an experienced group, there's some common challenges that you'll see when you go into organizations. Maybe share with our listeners, what are some of the common things that you see going on when you walk into an organization in the sales and sales process?
Well, this is the reason why when I sent you over my interview, outline, I called it adapt or die, because what salespeople do is they say, gee, I was very successful in selling this way in 2007 or 2002 or 1998. Well, guess what? That may not work anymore. Because buyers change. If buyers didn't change, you wouldn't have to change the way you sell. You could just stick with what made you successful back in whatever your day was. You know, I always talk about back in the day. Well, for me, back in the day was a long time ago. For some people, back in the day was 1998 or 2007. Well, guess what? Selling today is a lot different than it was then. So what I find is that the best salespeople do adapt, but the even successful salespeople sometimes are not conscious enough to be able to realize, gee, this has changed, so I need to change. Let me give you a specific example. Something it's very topical for me because it was something I read. It was an article in the Harvard Business Review online called The End of Solution Sales. Now, to some sales executives that I talk to, they think that we're going to go to solution sales as opposed to just selling products. And they think this is a big transformation. And I say, well, welcome to 1983. You know, solution selling has been around for a long time.
For a while, yeah.
Because we're taught, that we have to listen to the customer and find out what their issues are and all that. Well, guess what? That's not enough anymore. And the reason is that it presumes that the customer has an active pain and that they want to change. They just want to figure out how they want to change. Well, most customers don't really want to change unless there's a compelling reason. So in this article in Harvard Business Review, it's a very interesting article, but they put forth a lot of things that I tell my clients, which is you got to provoke the customer to instead of that kind of old, I find it a very irritating way to open a conversation, a salesperson to an executive by saying, what keeps you up at night? I've actually had a sales executive tell me what keeps me up at night is stupid salespeople asking me that stupid question, right? Because it's so trite.
Well, they kind of expect you to know this stuff walking in, right? Do your homework.
They expect you not only to know their business, but if you really want them to buy something, you have to be able to say something that provokes them to think, gee, this person has got something important to say. Whether they agree with it or not, you need to have a provocative point of view that you come in with, and that has to be well thought out. That means you don't just do research on the company so you can say, I saw in your last K1 or your last 10Q or your last 10K, these were your results. Well, that's common knowledge. Okay, you read my 10K. So what? Tell me something that is an insight that makes me want to listen more and then find out, well, can you help me in that area?
Well, let me actually approach that a different way and ask this. Do you think it's better to walk in and try to make an attention-getting statement or go in and ask an attention-getting question?
I think that it's probably better to make the attention-getting statement and then frame it as an open-ended question. So you make you basically make a provocative statement from your point of view and then frame a question that invites them to react to that. So that frankly, whether they agree or not, if it's an intelligent point of view, they're going to start a dialogue with you. But you've now provoked a new type of a conversation with them. So and that's what I don't want to pitch this Harvard Business Review article too much, but it is very much aligned with what I'm trying to get my clients to think about. And it reminded me of a conversation. I travel a lot, and I was sitting on a plane, and I was chatting with a gentleman next to me who was a CIO, and I said, hey, I work with technology salesmen trying to help them be more effective in calling on people like you. Do you ever see, software or hardware salesmen? And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, well, what's your impression of, can you give me any insights? He said, well, they need to understand that I'm not that lonely, and they're not that charming, and I don't need another friend. I need for them to come in here and make an impact on my business, and they need to – I don't have time for them if they don't do that, because I've got other people that will buy if I just need some more servers or if I need some more databases or whatever that is.
Well, that's a great point. Let's dive into that a little deeper for our listeners to really get this concept, because I had somebody come in not long ago and we were chatting, and they went as far as to say relationship selling is dead.
That's a great question. Let me then now contradict myself and say while the customer doesn't need another friend, you can stumble right out of the blocks if you don't build a rapport with the customer. So another thing that I see experienced salespeople do, some are very intuitively able to align with different types of customers' behavioral styles. A lot of people can't do that, though, and so they click with some types of salespeople with some types of buyers, and then they don't click with other types of buyers. And what I've uncovered is an approach to be able to, and that's not unique to me. There are several firms that do this, that teach salespeople how to align better out of the block so that they have a chance to have that dialogue with the customer. And let me be very specific about what I'm talking about. When I'm doing training with a customer on this, I use a methodology called the DISC profile. And most people in business know what a DISC profile is. It's been around forever. I've been to team building sessions and had the DISC profile. I've been to relationship counseling had the DISC profile. But in sales, it's very useful because it's not a personality assessment, it's a behavioral assessment. And so if I can use it then to look at my client and assess their behavior, because I can observe their behavior. And what clicks with me about the DISC profile, and most, and I'm using this with some pretty advanced salespeople, is most salespeople, there's several elements that the profile is measuring about a person, and one is are they fast paced, are they slow paced, do they talk fast and loud, or are they very thoughtful and soft spoken? Well, most salespeople are fast paced. 9 out of 10 people in the world are not. And so there's a built-in friction between salespeople and customers just because of their style. And that's why customers get frustrated with salespeople thinking they're pushy, and salespeople get frustrated with buyers thinking, I'm trying to sell you a dollar for 10 cents, and you just won't, you know, why won't you make up your mind, right? And so, but it's the salesperson's job to align. So, and we can teach them how to do that. We can teach them how to recognize and align better out of the blocks. Now, that doesn't mean that relationship is everything, but you have to have some rapport, or otherwise the customer shuts down on you because they don't want to be sold to. They want you to collaborate with them, and they want you know how it is when you meet somebody that you click with. Well, usually it's because they're probably kind of like you are, right? They're like, you're an enthusiastic person. I'm an enthusiastic person. When we met 25, 30 minutes ago, you know, we kind of clicked. I hope we did anyhow. So sometimes that wouldn't happen.
You'll find out if you read my tweets, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll put up there what I really think.
That presumptuous guy from TechCSO, he thought I really liked him. But most, here's the thing, most people that buy technology are very detail-oriented. They're database administrators, they're network administrators, they're analysts. They don't necessarily like the sales personality, right? Or what do we think of as that prototypical? So it's the salesperson's job to be the chameleon, if you will, or I call it alignment. You still have to be true to yourself, but you can adapt better. So relationship isn't everything, but I can build a relationship with you by getting a chance to do a good job for you and delivering on some promises, but I may not ever get that chance if I don't establish some rapport. So that's important too.
So if I got people that are listening and they're thinking, man, I need some sales help, or I need somebody to come in at least take a look at what's going on, mm-hmm. or maybe I need a different executive, how do they go about getting in touch with you guys?
Well, it's TechCXO.com, and then you'll see the finance practice, sales practice, et cetera. One of the things that people that are interested in, I wonder if we are doing things right, is they might click on an element of our website called the sales check. It's a diagnostic that we do for customers that's based on some solid research that can help them figure out, well, what are the best salespeople in my industry doing, and how do I measure up? So that's one way to do it.
All right. Well, great. Well, I want to bring Brian back into the conversation at this point. You know, I want to use the rest of our time to really kind of hit on some of these ideas that go against conventional norms and drive at that. So, Brian, I'm going to come back to you with this idea of adapt or die. How does that show up right now in the marketing world, and where have you seen some companies that are dying because they're stuck on some conventional marketing wisdom instead of adapting to the way businesses are interacting and customers are interacting in today's marketplace?
Well, again, I guess the immediate example I was just thinking about was, I'm working with a company right now that was struggling, you know, as I said, was struggling to achieve the growth they were wanting to see with their established products. And rather than, you know, put the time and the effort into really, you know, getting some competitive advantages with those products and making sure that they were, you know, maximizing the growth available out of those, they tried to line extend, you know, into that next space. And for them, they don't have the resources to be able to really do that effectively. So, you know, that's put a massive strain on everything because now, you know, like I said, it's now the product development is spread broader. So they're not, you know, they're not putting development as much into their base products, et cetera. So I think you have to be very, very purposeful about where you're looking for to try to drive that next dollar of growth. And so, and it just seems like sometimes some of the easiest, most obvious solutions are not the best approaches to go after.
Well, sometimes companies have lost touch. You know, you mentioned branding. Sometimes companies have lost touch with who they are. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned adapting, you know, talking about how do we adapt, how do we change, like salespeople, you know, how do they meet their customer? But sometimes you lose authenticity when you try to adapt too much. I mean, how do you adapt with marketing or with sales,
right,
and not lose authenticity as to who you are?
I think that when you're talking about a company, I think that especially for smaller companies, Brian, I don't know if you find this frequently, there's so many opportunities out there they can lose their focus and mm-hmm. they can kind of lose who they are because they want to go dabble in this, dabble in that. And the most strategic decisions they have to make are, what are we not going to do so we can stay true to our core values, beliefs, and competencies. Now, for salespeople, when I'm talking about adapting, I'm talking about changing our approach to reflect the changing buying approach. But I'm not talking about not being true to yourself. And because if you come across as false in any of this, I think the best salespeople are transparent in their, in other words, the customer will know them. They'll know that they're not trying to be manipulated. They are, they're that kind of person that they don't, the customer doesn't feel like they're being sold to. They feel like they're being consulted with. Now, if it's a transactional sale, it's a little bit different.
I was just going to ask that question.
The kind of sale I'm talking about is a long-term B2B sale where you've got a relationship. You do need, you might not have trust built with that customer to make the first sale, because I don't think you can build trust during the sales cycle because of the natural skepticism that people have about being something they don't want to change in the first place.
Right.
Change is very hard for them. And they have a they don't need to have trust. They just need to prefer you and then act on that preference and buy from you. Then at that point in time, you can, if you deliver on your promises, you do what you say you're going to do, then you've got the opportunity to build trust on the long term. And then your true self is going to show up in that. So if you're faking it on the first sale and you're in one of these longer term, that's probably not the right. You should be in one of those one and done kind of sales environments. I actually have known salespeople that didn't like that, you know, being engaged for a long period of time or the long sales cycle. They would rather go in, and my first sales job was at ADP, and I had to sell 100 deals a year. I had to sell two a week. You know, it was one or two call close, boom, moving on to the next, selling payroll systems, right? And I find it much more satisfying to go sell big software systems. That was my next step in my career path. But that's not for everybody, right? Now, the question is salespeople being true to themselves. Some people don't want to change. They think, gosh, this worked for me, and they'll just keep doing what it was doing, even though they're not getting the plaques on the wall anymore. They're not going on the trips anymore, right? But I think the most enlightened salespeople say, gee, I need to figure out what's going wrong. The best athletes do this. They have coaches that help them spot the bad habits that built in or the complacencies that built in and work on those specific things. The best salespeople do too, because they are they're constantly having to work on their craft. A friend of mine says, it's a funny thing about sales, it's the only sport we only practice on game day, and that's true.
Yeah, we do our practice on people that can actually write checks.
Exactly. and so I think, but the best salespeople fight against that tendency, and they are constantly working on their craft, because it is it's a worthy profession. It's not just something that sometimes people think, well, I'm just going to do sales long enough to get promoted into marketing or something like that.
I'm going to do sales until I can become a manager.
That's right.
Then I won't have to sell anymore.
Then I won't have to cold call.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I was just going to build on what Brad was saying is, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges, and you see it, I think, predominantly in sales today, is the ability to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, you talked about adapt or die. Sometimes you need to say no to business. And that's very easy to do when you're 110, 130% of quota. When you're out there and you're slogging away at 60% of quota,
and
you know you're not quite the perfect fit, you know, that's where it's really, really difficult to say no and say, you know what, we're not really the best application, which may help build that trust for the sales next time down the road. But, man, is that...
Well, that's a grand delusion, and with some of the companies that I've worked with, one of the things I always see, and Brad, maybe you've seen this, but you walk in, and the salespeople can't make changes because they're all busy.
Right.
All right, oh, we're busy, we're covered up, right? You know, we're working 10, 12, 14-hour days. Mm-hmm. But if you boil down some of these 12, 14-hour days, you're going to find the actual productivity to be 90 minutes or less.
That's right.
You know, that's probably
being... That's how much FaceTime they may have with the customer or actual selling time. That's
just actual productivity time doesn't boil down to be very much. And, of course... Now we're back to why, you know, this fractional idea is probably really good for executives too, because don't we see some of the same thing, executives kind of riding the pine?
I have a friend of mine basically saying, absolutely. But a friend of mine says, you know, talking about sales managers, they're too busy to win, basically. They're so busy doing things, they won't step back and think, is this the right opportunity, as Brian mentioned, for me to be even working on it in the first place? And salespeople in many cases are the same way. I'm working with one client now where they're so activity-driven, and trying to convince them to step back and think critically about, should I even be working on this opportunity? And, well, you know, if I qualify to this opportunity, I don't have any pipeline anymore. That's it's kind of a uncomfortable feeling because my manager's going to look and say, where are your deals? Well, and I qualified out of them. But I think that one of the things that that the best salespeople do is they lose early. That's something I learned a long time. I actually want to win or lose early. I want to do something early on to change the game for me, and a lot of salespeople play it safe. This is another kind of breakthrough that some salespeople need to, they don't need to just satisfy the customer. They're not a concierge. That's a lot of salespeople think, if the customer wants something, I just go do it. And they're just getting more and more out of control as they go through the sales cycle. And Brian said that the ability to say no is a sign of maturity in sales and growth in your profession. And it's a professional no. It's a, I can't do that for you unless you can do this for me. Or I don't think we should even be engaged because I don't think my solution's a good fit for you. And that takes a lot of maturity and a lot of ability. You do that when you have a lot of alternatives because you're already over goal, you've got a big pipeline, or you're just smart, and you know that's the best way to, rather than just, you know, hoping, maybe throwing a bunch of stuff on the wall and hoping some deals stick. Quote and hope is what I call that kind of selling. That's not good.
Right. Brian, how do we do that with marketing? Can you win early or lose early with your marketing strategy?
Well, yeah, I think you can. I guess what I really try to help companies do is be able to, you know, instead of taking a shotgun approach and just trying to throw, you know, stuff against the wall and see what sticks, but try to take some rifle shots. And particularly, again, in today's environment with the web and everything else like that, you can go out there and find what is going to work very, very quickly and then be able to, you know, try to ramp that up. So, you know, I spent 10 years at Procter & Gamble, and you know, Procter does everything with, you know, just immense amounts of consumer research, really, you know, to understand what the consumer's at. But, you know, I think that's even more critical today. Again, you know, we go back to, you know, trying to find distinctiveness for your business. But the great news is there's a lot of ways, a lot of different vehicles that you can use to be able to ferret that out very, very quickly and then determine, okay, oops, that's, you know, that's not going to be a path we really want to go down. Let's turn that off and try a different approach.
Well, I want to throw a little bit of a challenge at that just for discussion here, and that is this idea of customer research, because we hear that a lot. Find out what your customer wants and then give it to them. But then if you look at someone like Apple, you know, Steve Jobs went completely against that and says, look, we'll tell the customer what they want. Mm-hmm. So yeah. How do you know which path to go down? How do you know when you should do the research, and how do you know when you should just come to market and tell customers what they want?
It's a great question. I think part of it is, you know, if you're sitting there with Apple's balance sheet, you got a little bit more flexibility, you know, than some of the small companies that are out there, you know, that are struggling, you know, like I said, for survival. But, you know, that's the one Achilles heel of market research is, you know, kind of tracking what already exists today or attitudes that are already established today versus, you know, that forward thinking aspect. So I think, you know, something that you really got to approach on a business by, you know, business basis or a product by product basis. But you just got to understand, you know, when you're rolling those dices on, I'm going to tell you what you want, it's just, you know, that's a much bigger risk that you're taking on. And I think you got to just, you know, kind of analyze, you know, from your own specific business situation, can you afford to take that risk?
What do you think on that, Brad?
Well, it is a complex question because, and it depends on what you're offering to the market. If what you're offering to the market is something that people wake up in the morning knowing they need it or they need more of it, then you just want to have the best one and make sure people are aware of you. But a lot of the most innovative ideas, people don't wake up in the morning thinking they want it. And they have to be led in that direction. And that's why, actually, the antithesis of the sales concierge is the sales leader, the one that the salesperson that will lead the customer down a path. It's good for them. It's good for their customer because it's going to impact their business in a very, very positive way. But that's a different kind of salesperson because they're not just telling the customer about the product and the price. They're telling a story about how we're going to make an impact on your business, which is provoking the customer to say, "Well, tell me more about that. Who else have you done that with?" And it's sort of a risky way to go about it, but it is a breakthrough way because with a lot of our small clients, they have a hard time breaking through the clutter. So unless they're just selling a widget that everybody, you know, and they have customers that want to buy those widgets from them, they kind of have to lead the customer. Either they lead them through their marketing approach, or if they have a field sales or a direct sales approach, the salespeople will lead the customers down those paths. And It's not in every salesperson's comfort zone. By the way, one of the things that's changed, and one of the things that's the conventional thinking is, and even sales managers today, I want my salespeople to only work on what's called BANT deals. And a lot of salespeople out there know what BANT is. It's budget, authority, deed, and timeline. In other words, they're going to buy something. I just need to go win that business. There's not enough of that out there. There's not enough to go around because there's very few must-have systems anymore. So we've got to stimulate that with you know, sales leadership, marketing leadership.
The only thing I was just going to add, you know, going back to Steve Jobs, brilliant visionary. You can't take obviously anything away from there. But if you think about a lot of his innovations, it was based upon some very simple though fundamental consumer insights of simplicity. You know, the entire Apple line kind of revolves around that. So, you know, you think of something revolutionary like, you know, the iPad. There are tablets out there at the same time. He took it to a whole nother level, though, in terms of, again, simplicity and, you know, driving something out of the box, you know, from a simplistic aspect. Now, with that simplicity comes a lot of restrictions also, but obviously consumers have voted with their, you know, with their dollars that they would, yeah, that they would definitely take that simplicity.
Yeah, that was an adaption too, though, because there was a while where customers thought if it's not complicated, it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get that.
If the manual wasn't an inch thick, then there weren't enough features in this product. Yeah.
That's so exactly right.
If you buy any Apple product, you don't hardly get a manual. So,
So let me ask one more question before we wrap up today, because, you know, I wanted to kind of talk about changes in this marketplace when it comes to commoditization of whatever it is you do. Because this is happening in areas we never thought it would. I mean, if you sell a widget, it's not surprising somebody else moves into the market. It's a widget. You know, all widgets are the same. You're commoditized now. But this morning at the gym, I heard a couple of business guys talking, and the one guy, he's in a very service-oriented business, but he's got new competition entering the market, and they're willing to just undercut everything. His comment was actually interesting. He goes, I've been around much longer, so I have a lot of overhead, so I can't compete on price, mm-hmm. which should be just the opposite. You should have enough customer base, but I won't go into all that. But what do you do when your company is facing potential commoditization in your industry?
I'll talk about from a sales perspective, and I'll save the marketing perspective from Brian, but a lot of my clients sell some pretty complex technology. It doesn't have to be complex, but it is technology. And it's even if it is differentiated, it's hard for the customers to tell the difference. Because what happens is they look at two or three vendors, and they think that by doing a very logical and thorough evaluation, the one vendor is going to pop up and be the obvious best choice. And what happens is they get to the end of the evaluation, and they all look the same because they can all do the job because they all have good products, right? And so whether they're truly commoditized or not, the customer, this is actually where customers are, in many cases, are better at buying than salespeople are at selling, because at the end of the sale, they say, gee, you look just like your competition, but they're 50% the price that you are. So what are you going to do for me? Whether that's true or not, that procurement people are very skilled in buying that way. So the solution from a salesperson's perspective is they need to be the source of differentiation. And they do it in the way they sell. They do it by using leading the customer by uncovering those new insights that provoke the customer to think a different way about their business. And then at that point, that's fertile ground for them to be able to connect whatever their technology or their product is. We can enable you to do that. Then that becomes, in many cases, it's a marketing principle. The first person that says that to a customer gets the position in the mind of the customer. And that's the differentiation. It's not that the product's differentiated. It's that your position is differentiated. And you do that customer by customer. In the marketing sense, you do it. You're trying to do it for a whole market or market segment. So,
yeah, I would just build off what he said. It's virtually everything in some ways is becoming commoditized today. I mean, it is a major challenge for businesses to face. And I think I've talked a lot of the theme of, you know, differentiation, but trying to come up with those distinctiveness. And I think you have to, the more you can do that across your entire business spectrum, the better off you're going to be, so that your website is distinctive in some way, that you're attempting to plow out some ground that you can own, you know, in a unique way. To the, you know, the sales collateral, to obviously to your product pipeline. I mean, you've got to work it into all of those areas. But you know, with a lot of people today, their biggest competitors do nothing.
That's right.
So, you know, so many times I've seen, you know, where it used to be if you got somebody in a software sales contract standpoint, you got them to a 90% and you're talking about contracts, you could count on the closing in the next 30, 60 days. Today that may stretch out to 6 months. And you may lose it.
It may not ever happen. There's actually some of the research that we use from a research firm called CSO Insights. In 2011, 50% of forecasted deals didn't close at all. I'm talking about not 50% of deals in the pipeline. I'm talking about 50% of the deals that people thought they were going to win did not close.
Yep.
And so your biggest, that is the biggest competition. You could have read that earlier if you would have had some more insight, if you could have gotten to different people, maybe realized they weren't going to buy anything at all because the person you were dealing with thought it was a strategic problem that needed to be solved, but somebody else had to write a check or sign a contract had a different perspective. So I think this idea of creating differentiation in a market where it's a very – very confused buyer out there is where that sales skill and sales leadership really comes into play. And then the best companies and the best salespeople are able to do that on a consistent basis. Sometimes people do it sometimes, and that's a matter of fact, when I work with salespeople, they said, oh, I've heard about that. I do that sometimes. I said, that's the problem. You just do it sometimes. Mm-hmm. You need to do it consistently. You need to do it very well, and you need to do it at the right time with the right people. And then you're going to break through to the next level.
Well, let's jump one step ahead of that and address this, and maybe you guys can share the experience of your own personal companies, how you do it. But a lot of people would be happy if they just had somebody in that contract negotiation stage that they could stretch out 6 months. But it's even their industry has gotten so commoditized, or the consumer is so busy and so inundated running their own business. You know, in your world, how do you get people to just open up and give you that 5 or 10 minutes to make contact, build some type of rapport, and ask that provoking question or make that provocative statement? How do you guys go to market?
With our own firms? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, blessing is that I don't really have to do that. I can consult with companies on how to do that, but I've got a portfolio of clients that and they come to me through referrals. If I was having to do cold calling and direct demand generation for my own, it would be a big challenge because it's hard to differentiate because there are other firms out there that do what they do. The people that hire me are typically people that have known me or have worked or they knew somebody that trusted me and I was recommended to them. And so in selling professional services, which is a very hard area to differentiate in, referrals from trusted advisors is the primary source of differentiation. Because when I get in there, and as a matter of fact, people are listening right now, I probably sound like every other sales consultant that they've ever heard. So it's the proofs in the deliverables and the outcomes and the transformations that the customers can attest to. That's where it comes. So,
I mean, we at the Chief Outsider side, we are constantly looking to try to identify pain points. So, where is it that we can potentially lessen the pain for somebody? A pain point may be, okay, I'm here, here's my reality today, and there's where I want to be in 3 or 4 years, and I don't see the path on how to get there. That may be the pain. It may just be the pain of trying to, meet the challenges of today, again, without having necessarily the bench strength that they think they really need to be able to get there. So it's constantly looking for kind of those pain points or those insights. So, it might be renting versus owning, or just, going after different positionings that we can try to, target those pain points that are out there in the marketplace.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, guys, thank you so much for being on the show today. One last time before we wrap up today, let's give people some contact information so they know how to reach out to you. Brian, I'll start with you. How do people get in touch with you and find out about Chief Outsiders?
Okay, again, my name is Brian Sholley. Just go to Chief Outsiders, so www.chiefoutsider.com, and they can be able to find my profile on there or as well as all the other consultants that we have.
Thank you. And Brad, TechCXO?
It's Tech. TechCXO.com. My email is brad.childress@techcxo.com. And thanks very much, Andy.
All right. Well, guys, for those of you out there listening, thanks for tuning in to Renegade Radio. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Hope you took some notes. It is definitely a changing marketplace in an ever-changing time, which is why we do this show, because you can't do it the same old way. I love Brad's idea, adapt or die. We hope that you're going to make some adaptions, make some changes, get out of the proverbial box, do something different, grow your business, outsource if you need to. Get a fractional executive, get somebody in there helping you, get some advice. You don't have to do it on your own. You can tune into our show. You can reach out to our guests. You can reach out to me. We'd love to see if we can help you increase your performance and increase your profitability. And remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.